Support comes from Pacific Science Center, presenting Jane Goodall, Reasons for Hope, a film that draws on decades of her work, offering a journey around the globe to share good news stories and help inspire people to make a difference. Now playing in the Boeing IMAX Theater. More at pacsci.org.
From KUOW, this is Soundside. I'm Mike Davis, filling in for Libby Dykman. Spring is a hard time for most football fans. No NFL, no college football, no on-the-field action, just the occasional news of a trade or a contract signing. But in Seattle, there's something new to cheer on. The Seattle Sea Dragons of the XFL.
Run, DiNucci, end zone, he's in, Seattle on the board.
Well, they're 3-2. They lost their first two games, like on the last play of the game. Then they won their last three. They're definitely on the right track.
That's Scott Hansen from the Seattle Times. There are a lot of familiar things about these games. The Sea Dragons play at Lumen Field. There's even former Seahawks receiver Josh Gordon. But there are differences, like rules designed to make the games more exciting. For example, kickoffs no longer set teams on opposite ends of the field. Instead, they just stand 5 yards apart from each other.
The kickoff rule. You need to clear the 20, keep it in front of the end zone.
There are other differences NFL fans will notice too.
The biggest one is probably is that there's no extra points. So teams can get either 1, 2, or 3 points after a touchdown. You get 1 point if you try a one play from the 2-yard line, 2 points if you try it from the 5-yard line, and 3 if you try it from the 10.
Great formation for Ben DiNucci, and Seattle is right in the middle of this race in the XFL North.
This will be the first full season the Sea Dragons have played. The team was originally formed in 2020, but after playing just 5 games, they and the rest of the league had to stop due to COVID restrictions. And for a time, it seemed like that was the end of the XFL altogether. But a lot of people showed up for those games in Seattle.
You got 30,000 the first game, I think about 20 the next. It was a fairly successful market, so I think it was kind of a no-brainer for them to come back here when this new reboot of the league, you know, with the new owners, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Danny Garcia and a few others.
Historically, alternative professional leagues have always struggled. This is actually the third version of the XFL. The first was created by Vince McMahon, the famed head of WWE wrestling. It only lasted one season.
I mean, it was almost like WWE on the football field. It was scantily clad cheerleaders. It was just really kind of a football was secondary.
This latest version of the XFL is going for a more familiar feel.
I think they realize for this league to be successful, it has to be good football. If it's not good football, people aren't going to come.
Even so, Scott tells me that so far, attendance numbers are down compared to 2020, around 9 or 10,000 a game. It's a bit of a chicken and egg question. Can teams build a fan base strong enough to survive? And for fans, how much do they want to cheer on or invest in a team that might not be around next year? The question of how spring football can survive is an old one. It's something that Paul Reiths knows well. Reiths is a historian of alternative sports leagues, and he told me that others have tried and ultimately failed. Notably, there was the USFL from the 1980s.
The original thought behind the USFL was that, yes, there was room for a spring football league, that it would be something that wouldn't be at the same level as the NFL in terms of the player level, the attendance, or the television ratings, but it would still do well enough in the spring and summer that it could support itself. The founder thought that they could control player salaries, that they would hit television ratings, a rating of around a 5 when the NFL was drawing about a 14 or better, and draw an average attendance of right around 25,000 when the NFL was well over 50 at the time. So it was something that was going to be on a smaller scale, but that it was built to be sustainable, or at least that was the vision.
And I know that they, obviously, eventually they didn't make it, but did they accomplish those goals at all?
So the thing that you really look at with the USFL, and I mentioned that it was a long, you know, the kind of the last in this long line of challengers to the NFL, it was the last challenger to any major league. So, of course, with basketball, you had had the American Basketball Association. With hockey, you had had the World Hockey Association. And you kind of had all this stuff rapidly happening in the 60s and 70s as kind of the appetite for professional sports was growing, as the television product of professional sports was growing. All these leagues were popping up. Well, the USFL was the last of those. It was a last attempt. So the fact that it lasted 3 years, in my opinion, is kind of a miracle. And it didn't miss any games in the process. When you look at the World Football League a decade earlier, it had franchises failed during the season and had skipped a bunch of games and then eventually folded in the middle of its second season. Well, the USFL made it all three seasons, and it was a much bigger effort than that. So, you know, the USFL did not succeed, not as originally intended, but there hasn't even been a real major league attempt since then, an attempt to challenge a major league since then. So really, to me, when I look at it, I look at it very fondly because it was almost miraculous that it made it three seasons.
Right. And it's interesting that you mentioned some of those even earlier attempts, because particularly in the NBA and the NFL, right, when you think of the AFL, that legacy is still here. We still celebrate the AFL. They still wear those throwback jerseys in games. You know, when the NBA merged with the ABA, some of those franchises are literally still here today. So I ask, what is the legacy of the USFL? Are there any teams that we still remember? Any players whose names we might still remember as that lingering legacy of that league?
The USFL was a major league effort, so it had its share of the greatest players of that time. You have Hall of Famers who came out of that league, such as Jim Kelly and Steve Young. Sam Mills was just inducted recently. Gary Zimmerman. You had this whole bevy of all-pro players. I saw somebody refer to it as, you know, when he watched the Pro Bowl in the late 80s, it was a who's who of the USFL for several years. The USFL took first-round draft picks away from the NFL, such as wide receiver Anthony Carter out of the University of Michigan. It signed three straight Heisman Trophy winners in Herschel Walker, Mike Rozier, and Doug Flutie. So it was getting, you know, some of the best players of the day to sign on. So to me, when I look at what the legacy of the USFL is, you really find it both in those players and in the legacy of spring football that has kind of followed forth from this. The NFL tried it a few years later with the World League of American Football. You know, we've seen the XFL, and now again we've seen the XFL. So the third time, we had the Alliance of American Football a few years ago. And so the USFL kicked all this off, that bringing in summer football wasn't anything that was besides a college practice time before that.
Okay, Paul, I have to ask, because obviously I recognized a bunch of those names that you just rattled off there. With that much talent, being able to be on TV, how did the USFL fail? What happened? It seems like they should have been more sustainable.
So the thing that's really easy to lose sight of is that these teams and these leagues are business entities, and hiring that much talent, even at the time, was very expensive. So the USFL, over the course of three seasons, lost $200 million. It had, you know, that was despite the fact that it was on ABC and that it had a contract with ESPN. And the hump that the USFL couldn't get over was that it couldn't get a television deal that would help really offset those losses from player salaries. That's what really sustained the American Football League in 1965, when NBC gave it a big television contract. At that moment, the NFL knew it was no longer a little thing that it could eventually wipe out of business. They knew that at that point they were going to have to merge or that salaries would kill both leagues. And that's kind of what the USFL never got to, was that next level television contract, which would have allowed it to maintain those salaries.
We've seen the XFL fail before. What's the difference between this attempt? Is it The Rock? Are we supposed to be sold by the celebrity? I mean, what are they doing now that they haven't done in their past failed attempts?
And of course, you know, it's interesting, you know, The Rock and Danny Garcia are really the ones who are out front of this XFL effort. But, you know, the guy who kind of made me excited about its prospects was Jerry Cardinale, who's the head of Redbird Capital and who brought $100 million into this deal.
Okay.
So when you start with nine figures, you at least, okay, if somebody wants to lose nine figures, and more power to them. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to give hundreds of players an extra opportunity that they might not have had otherwise. You know, the landscape has changed so much from the USFL. And I mentioned in particular what the USFL couldn't land was that next level television contract. Well, media today is so different. You have all these streaming options. You have subscriptions to those streaming options. You have broadcasters who are shelling out literally billions of dollars in rights payments to the National Football League alone, and who might be looking for, okay, is there a way to develop our own property so that, you know, we can broadcast it, we can bring in ratings, maybe not at that level, but pretty good ratings, and not have to shell out those rights fees? Or is there a way that we begin to flip this script a little bit? And so part of me wonders if that's what's going on right now with the XFL and with the new USFL, for that matter, which is owned by a television network, which is completely controlled by Fox. So, you know, that it seems that the broadcasters themselves are kind of driving this newest round a little bit.
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe you there, Paul. As an ESPN Plus subscriber, they are pushing the XFL extremely hard to us right now. They are bending over backwards to get us to watch. And, you know, it's interesting, though, because the NFL right now is bigger than ever. And, you know, you have college football with this long legacy of prestige. And it seems like there's not enough room for another league. But what I've noticed in the XFL is that it feels like they're kind of hanging their hat on trying to be different than NFL football. So you've seen some rule changes, right? Like there's no field goals after touchdowns. You know, you got the 1 point, 2 point, 3 point options. They change the way you do kickoffs. There are things that make the game feel different. Do you think that the different style of play will be enough to attract football fans?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's going to take more than that. I do. When I look at the XFL style of play, I see something that is different, but it doesn't really come across as gimmicky to me. Yes, you know, you've eliminated extra points and you have these different 1, 2, and 3 point options. Really, you know, the extra point, the NFL itself kind of got tired of how easy it was. And some could argue that maybe it's a tired option after the touchdown, and this brings a little bit more life into it. The XFL wanted to maintain kickoff returns rather than, you know, so many of the kickoffs going into the end zone and not being returned at all, as we see in the NFL.
Right.
So it has this modified kickoff where the covered team doesn't get as much of a running start. With onside kicks, the onside kick percentage in the NFL now is so low. Instead, the XFL gives you the option for a 4th and 15 play. You convert that, you get another drive. These things are interesting. We've already seen them have an impact in some games. It does make it pretty exciting at times.
It does.
So, you know, I think that it helps, but you know, what the XFL, I think, is really trying to do is sell something more, sell sell opportunity, sell entertainment. And I think that there's everything right with that, that sometimes with sports, we get so wrapped up in how our team is doing or, you know, if somebody has money on it, how that's performing, that we've kind of lost our way sometimes with looking at sports as entertainment. And I think hopefully that's what, you know, leagues such as the XFL and new USFL can bring back to the table a little bit.
Yeah. Seattle, we love our sports here. And one thing about the XFL that I've heard is that the ticket prices are much easier and much more accessible for fans. With like right here in Seattle, you can get packages for the 5 home games that are around $100, which you can't get one Seahawk game for that price. Right. So for the people, Paul, who are fans of the XFL, who want to see the league thrive, do you have any wisdom or any words of encouragement that you can offer that might lead to the success of this league?
Go out, see a game, have fun. None of these leagues, it kind of reminds us of the rest of life, that tomorrow is not guaranteed. So as long as they're there, go out, have fun, enjoy it, buy those weird Dragons onesies and sit in the first row and have fun. Just, when I look at that Seattle crowd, you know, they're just having a good time out there. And that's really what it's all about, is just bringing that entertainment aspect back to sports. The XFL offers a little bit more accessibility. And you mentioned it, you know, if you're bringing a family to a game, what a terrific experience. Through the eyes of a child, this is a major event. And that's the way that they're going to grow up remembering it. So just enjoy it, have fun, be glad it's there, and support it the best that you can.
Thank you. Thank you. Paul Reiths is a collector and historian of the USFL and other alternative NFL leagues. Paul, thank you so much for joining me today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.